It's the Mid-Michigan Pet Expert Talk Show on 1320 WILS. Now back to Rick Bruce and Lee Cohen, two guys who still argue about whether or not Mr. Ed could really talk.
We're back here with the Mid-Michigan Pet Expert Talk Show. And Rick, we have with us as a returning guest on the line, Bill Thompson III, who is the editor and co-publisher of Bird Watchers Digest. I can testify, one of my wife's favorite monthly magazines. Welcome back to the show, Bill.
Thanks, guys. Happy to be here.
Oh, it's our pleasure to have you. Bill, the reason we wanted to have you in is because clearly as the weather is changing, and yes, we all have to concede summer is over, and I wanted to talk about, as the birds are migrating south, what is it that people can do in order to attract some of these birds, or at least help them out with their fall migration?
Right. That's a really good question. You know, there are some things you can do, and there are some things that you don't need to do. For example, this time of year on our farm here in southeast Ohio, we never pull our garden down. We don't, you know, cut all the high weeds on the edge of our yard. We just let that stuff stand as a natural food source for the birds. You know, we'll watch in our garden on the old sort of frost-killed tomato plants and squash vines and things that the wrens and chickadees and kinglets and even some things like yellow-rumped warblers will be poking through there on a daily basis, pulling out spider eggs and insects and this and that. And, of course, there's also seed in a lot of those plants, too, that will be there throughout the winter. And that's a really good natural source. So that's one thing you can do by just maybe being a little lazy on the maintenance for a while until you think the birds aren't going through it anymore. Oftentimes we gather that stuff up in the spring and burn it before we start planting and, you know, killing again. The other thing to do is, this is a great time of year to start your bird feeding program. And it's very easy to do if you don't currently feed birds. Really, you know, all you need is a place to scatter a little bit of seed to get started. And unlike when I started bird watching 35 or 40 years ago, when it was hard to go anywhere and find commercially available bird feeders and seed, you know, nowadays you can go practically anywhere and there's going to be a source of feeders and seed and things like that to get your yard going. But the basic food I always tell people to feed, start off with black oil sunflower seed. That's kind of the hamburger of the bird feeding world, and a lot of birds eat black oil sunflower seed. It's very easy to crack open the shells, and that's a really great place to start.
It has quite a bit of energy in it too, I would assume.
Yeah, the nut meats are really big. They're a lot better. You know, back when I started feeding birds, it was white striped sunflower, and the black oil was, as its name suggests, was used to mash up and, you know, make sunflower oil. But then they discovered that it was much better as a bird food. So, since about the late 70s, early 80s, most of us have been feeding black oil sunflower seed.
Do you have different recommendations for the city dweller than you do the person that has, you know, the big spread out in the country?
Yeah, that's a good differentiation to make, Rick. Many folks in the city are concerned about feeding on the ground because maybe they might have a squirrel problem or worse, they might have, you know, mice and rats even if they're in a super urban setting. In that case, you want to use a feeder that either has a tray below it to catch the spilled seed, a hanging feeder that is, or you want to use food like sunflower nut meats, you know, that's, in other words, sunflower that's already been removed from the shell, because that is a way to feed that pretty much the birds eat everything and nothing really falls to the ground, because they're not having to go through the work of cracking the shells open, which can be kind of messy and lots of bits of food fall here and there. So I often suggest for folks who are in a condo in the city or in an apartment with just a balcony, get a small little sunflower a tube feeder or a hopper feeder with a tray underneath it, and feed sunflower hearts. That's a food that's universally accepted, and there won't be a lot of waste and spillage.
That's very good advice.
Yeah, it's interesting. We're talking this morning with Bill Thompson III, editor and co-publisher of Birdwatchers Digest. Bill, one of the pieces that I saw that you wrote that was very interesting to me was replacing old dirty nests as something to do to help with migration. This year we had the treat in my backyard of having bluebirds.
Oh, nice.
And, oh, it was fabulous. Excited my wife and I, but from what I read, they are a messy type, and it sounds like I've got my work cut out for me. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Well, most birds, most of our songbird species are make their own nests. They often make a cup nest, like a robin will make a cup nest out of grass and mud and leaves, and put it in the crotch of a tree. Typically, cardinals and most of our songbirds nest, build their own cup nests, and nest sort of out in cover, in habitat, in a tree or a shrub or something like that. Then we have the cavity nesting birds, and these are birds that prefer to nest inside a cavity that's been drilled in or is naturally occurring in, a hole in a tree, in a rock, in a bank, something like that. And these would include things like the swallow species, bluebirds, a few of our flycatchers, even things like kestrels and barred owls. These are all birds that love to nest in a cavity, whether it's natural or human supplied. So with bluebirds, most bluebirds these days, especially in the eastern half of the United States, nest in human supplied boxes. And nesting inside a box is a messy affair because these birds are protected with the cavity that they're in, the box that they're in. They stay in there for quite a long time while they're developing. And, of course, all the stuff that happens with human babies happens with bird babies, too. They poop a lot. So, naturally, a nest gets kind of messy, and they can get some insect pests in there and things that can't be very healthy for the birds, which is why we always recommend during the nesting season for people to check in on their land, be a good landlord to their birds and check in on them, remove pests and so forth. But this time of year, after the nesting season is over for all those of us who live, up here in the northern part of the country, you want to take out the old nest and replace it with a new lining of grass, dry grass. We often go out in our field after a week or so of dry weather and just, take a sickle and cut a bunch of long, dry, thin, soft grass, and we keep that in a bag in our garage. And then this time of year, we go out, clean out the old nest, wipe them out with a little whisk broom, and then stick a new little bit of grass in there. And that's not so much for nesting this time of year as it is for roosting, just providing a little soft insulation inside the box for the birds, because they will use these boxes in the winter for roosting at night.
Hmm. Yeah, it's a fascinating endeavor to think about all of that, especially as high up as some of them are.
Yeah.
But at the same time, the logic of it makes perfect sense. Bill, how do people go about attracting birds to their backyard this time of year? What are the different tricks that they can do in order to get these different birds as they are passing through?
Well, a lot of the birds that will be migrating south are not birds that are ever going to stop at your bird feeder. And for things like tanagers and orioles and warblers and vireos and many of our thrushes, these are woodland birds that don't typically come to our feeders. So there's not much you can do other than having a variety of habitat there, mm-hmm. A variety of trees. We particularly love on our farm, we love willows, we love birches, we have a lot of native pines that our birds seem to really like. And we've noticed, because we're up on a hilltop, that during fall migration, these birds will be flying along and we'll see them drop out of the sky when they spot our giant willow tree or when they spot our cluster of birches, because these are birds are visual, respond to visual cues, and they know. They may not know that's a birch tree, but they know that tree typically has lots of caterpillars or insects, and that means food. So having that variety of bird-friendly plants and a variety of habitat types in your property can be a very good attraction for passing birds. But then, of course, if you want to get things like sparrows and finches in, it's good to have a variety of foods at your feeding station. And typical feeding station would have, three or four or five different kinds of food. The sunflower seed that I mentioned before, either black oil sunflower in the shell or sunflower hearts, some sort of a mixed seed that's scattered on the ground or on a low platform feeder for the birds that prefer to feed near the ground. And then you might want to get into feeding some thistle seed, which is sometimes also called Niger seed. And then, one of the higher fat seeds and foods to offer to birds like suet or suet dough or peanuts. Peanuts have been a new trend here in North America in bird feeding really in about the past 15 years. We've really become much more avidly involved in feeding peanuts to birds.
Yeah, definitely will attract woodpeckers. I can say that with certainty because I have seen them on there because of the peanuts. Bill, let me ask this question because one of the things that I'm running into, and I know a lot of people are, is there are a number of squirrels who are out there gathering up their nuts for the winter, and they come across these feeders, and the heck with the birds, they think it's all for them.
Right.
How do people deal with that?
You know what? If you and I could solve that, we'd be talking on our cell phones and our Maseratis right now. Because we'd be billionaires. There's squirrels are like the flying Walendas of the mammal kingdom. They can figure out if they know that there's a food source that they want to get at. That's basically they'll spend their entire time trying to figure out how to get at it. And I've seen squirrels give each other boosts. I've seen squirrels launch themselves off of trees. I've seen them jump from one thing to another so they can bounce off it. And, you know, like, seriously, like ninjas. So there's almost, if your backyard is wooded and you maybe have a deck or an overhanging eave within 10 feet of a bird feeder, in any direction, the squirrels can get to it. They can jump, they can leap. Anything that's below 4 feet, that's lower than 4 feet or 5 feet to the ground, they can jump up and get on. So it's almost impossible if you have a wooded, closed-in backyard and your feeders are near to anything, it's almost impossible to keep squirrels off it. But you can baffle the poles below the feeders to prevent them from climbing up the pole, and you can put a big baffle over the top of your feeders so that the squirrels can't drop down. So you'll see a lot of these commercially available bird feeders that are squirrel-proof, and they offer the baffling systems above and below the food. So the birds get used to it. They can fly right in and land on the feeder. The squirrels, it takes them a little bit longer to figure it out. But that's why you're seeing a trend, and this has been going on for the last 30 years in the bird feeder manufacturing business, a trend toward tougher materials, less wood, more metal, more composite stuff that the squirrels can't chew up because they'll chew right through a plastic feeder to get to the seed.
Yeah, I know that they will because I have seen that. Bill, let me ask this question because another area where we weren't sure what to do had to do with hummingbird feeders. We did take them down for the fall. Was that a mistake to do, or is that something that people should do in the fall?
You know, it's really, I wouldn't say it's a mistake, but the reason a lot of people think, oh, it's fall, I got to take down my hummingbird feeders, is they have heard the myth that they should take down their feeders in the fall or the hummingbirds won't migrate. And that's really just a myth. Hummingbirds have an internal clock, and they know when it's time to go based on the quality of light, the angle of the sunlight, the intensity of the sunlight, that, they might pick up and go when a cold front comes through, but they have an internal clock that tells them when to go. Having your hummingbird feeders up into late October, early November can result in a couple of things. For one, if you've got a late migrating hummingbird that's coming from the far north, that might be a really nice refueling stop for that bird in your backyard if your feeder is still up. The other thing is, increasingly we're noticing, again, over the last 20 or 30 years, a greater influx of western hummingbird species in the east, particularly toward the east coast and down all the way around the Gulf down to Texas, where we get these populations of wintering western hummingbirds like Rufus and Calliope and black-chinned hummingbirds, even some things like Anna's hummingbirds, birds that normally would be flying down to Mexico and or South America or Central America. These things they've learned now to fly east instead of south, and they survive on our gardens and at our feeders and then head back to breed in the west again. So a couple reasons to keep your feeders up. I will say this, if it's already past the big frost date when you're pretty much getting freezing temperatures every night, you don't want to let your hummingbird feeders freeze because then they're no good for anybody. So, if you want to keep one out, keep it in a protected place, keep the nectar in it fresh, and maybe if it's going to be a super cold night, bring it in, put it back out in the morning, and you might be surprised with something like a Rufus hummingbird showing up at your feeder.
We only have a short moment here, but what about water and water opportunities around the yard? Obviously, we have bird baths. How important is that? And, if you have a river nearby, it's not, and if you don't, it is, or what?
Yeah, you know, the thing is about water for birds, it's really great. They need it year-round, and it's really great if you can supply a shallow source of water, especially in the winter where the birds can drink without having to immerse themselves. It's hard for them on a big river to get down, you know, right to the edge to drink. And if you can supply a clean source of shallow water with a perch on the edge so the birds can dip in and drink without getting themselves totally wet in the winter, that's a good thing. And a lot of people accomplish that by having the water have a recirculating pump and by having a heater, maybe even a solar-powered heater in there to keep the water from freezing.
Interesting. And Bill, as a last question, for people's lawns, what should they do so that next year they will have a good supply of birds?
Well, you know, again, it's just think about planting bird-friendly plants. In the last couple of years, I've published a couple of books on identifying and feeding birds and a book on hummingbirds and butterflies, and they both are chock full of bird-friendly plant lists by zone. But this is also information that you can get on the Internet or from your state extension service. And, you know, pick some bird-friendly plants. This is a good time of year to plant trees right now. Get some things in the ground, and the birds will thank you for it.
Fantastic. We've been speaking this morning with Bill Thompson III, the editor and co-publisher of Birdwatchers Digest. Bill, thank you very much for your insights. It's been a fantastic conversation.
My pleasure, fellas. Always happy to be on.
Hey, we appreciate it. And Rick, we're going to continue the conversation with a birder from this area who's going to share some of his experiences right here on the Mid-Michigan Pet Expert Talk Show on 1320 WILS and 1320WILS.com.